Pseudopod episode 147, June 19th, 2009. This week's story, Orifice by John F. D. Taff. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from John F. D. Taff. It originally appeared in Hot Blood, Fear the Fever, and got an honourable mention in Year's Best Fantasy and Horror 10 back in 1997. John has published more than 40 short stories and 7 novels, and most of his work is available at fictionwise.com now. Your narrator this week is Chris Johnson of The Secret Lair, so get comfy and don't think about the pain. Pain is just a doorway. Besides, I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Orifice by John F. D. Taff. She told me on the way home, when you make a hole in something, anything, something else will want to get in through it. Or out. She had flounced away after that, flounced with her sparkling brown hair bouncing and shimmering in the sunlight, dancing across the freckles on her bare shoulders. I remember how her hair had smelled then, sunny and clean, and vitally alive. I can inhale even now and draw in the ghost of its presence, haunting in its intoxication. And she had smiled. I saw a glance of it before she turned to walk away, bright and sharp enough to cut and cauterize in one swipe. Or out, she had said. Christ. As she turned, her midriff top hiked up a bit, just a bit, to expose her taut, early summer belly, the smooth curve of her abdomen as it swept up to her breasts, and her tattoo. It was supposed to be a rose, red and black with touches of green here and there. Its stem began at her diaphragm, with the petals of the flower unfolding within the valley of her breasts. A flower, that's what she had wanted. To me, it never looked like a flower. But this is now, and that was before. "You want a what?" I asked as we sat shoulder to shoulder at the coffee bar in one of the more bohemian parts of the town she preferred. "A tattoo," she said, as if it were the most natural of desires. "Don't tell me you, of all people, have a problem with that." She giggled over her double latte, and that sound irritated something deep inside me, something whose existence up to that point I had been unaware of. Jesse moved in a strange circle, filled with slackers and hackers, New Agers and Xers, post-hippies and post-yuppies, headbangers and rappers, white supremacists and black Muslims, and I moved with her, albeit mostly in her wake. Her friends were into wild music, strong liquor, stronger drugs, wilder sex, everything. As Jesse succumbed to the varying gravitational influences of these friends, I tried all of it with her, without prejudging the experiences, without carrying away a lot of baggage afterwards. Most of the things we did with her friends I had never even considered before meeting her, and frankly, some of the things I'd never do again. But Jesse seemed to enjoy our relationship like that, and I happened to also, so what the hell, you know? In fact, I think that's what angered me most, my own response to her wanting a tattoo. I tried not to screw my face up too much as I formulated my answer. "A tattoo," I repeated, giving myself time to think of something more meaningful to say. "That's, interesting." I hid my face behind the steaming mug of herbal tea that sat mainly untouched before me. I hated the stuff, but Jesse thought I looked pale and said it would help. "You're serious. You really don't want me to get a tattoo," she said, setting her own cup down and peering intently at me. "It's not that," I stammered, trying desperately to think of what it was. "It's just that I don't..." "Okay, I don't want you to get a tattoo." "Why not?" she pressed, her look turning to one of baffled wonderment. "I don't know. It's just that I think they look cheap." I whispered the last word, turning my eyes away. "Mikey, you're so sweet." "Dopey, but sweet." She kissed me, and it was strawberries and cherry licorice, sweet and sticky, and I remember it so vividly that it hurts me even now. "Of course they're cheap. That's why I want one," she said, flashing me a wicked leer and raising her eyebrows. "Where?" "You're not jealous, are you? Of Mutt?" And her voice rose an octave, as it did whenever she thought some miraculous insight had been visited upon her. Mutt. I hadn't even thought of him. He worked in a tattoo shop down on 72nd. He was one of the crazy satellites Jessie still held in an erratic orbit. A past lover of hers who came to more of our parties than I might have preferred, and who still, I thought then, and know now, had some sort of hold on her. Jealous? Yes, sir. Guilty as charged. Sign me up. Book 'em, Dano. No, I responded. And I meant where on your body, not where in the city. Oh, she said dismissively, as if destroying that particular insight meant little to her. I was thinking of something on my chest or stomach. I like your chest the way it is. You didn't mind me getting my nipple pierced? You could take that out. Tattoos are just... I don't know, Jessie. I've gone along with nearly everything you've wanted. Christ, I even wore that male skirt you bought me, and for an entire weekend. But this, it's so permanent. When I turned back to her, I saw a face I didn't see often. It was not exactly cross, but crossed, full of silent measuring and analysis. Mikey, you decided to wear the skirt, which, by the way, I still think you looked really hot in. But this is my body, my decision. She was right. This was the first time I had ever tried to impose my feelings on something she wanted to do herself. I never told her how to dress or how to wear her hair, never even thought about it. You're right, I admitted, but you asked me, and I told you. Fair enough, she said, her mood shifting back to playful. You'll come with me and hold my hand, won't you? At least to make sure that Mutt doesn't make a pass at me. I'll come, I growled. The needle touched skin, vibrated with the small hum of a person in deep concentration. A smell, electrical, full of ozone with metallic undertones, crackled from everything in the cramped little back room of the tattoo parlor. There was a brief moment of contact, full of excitement and anticipation. Jessie grasped my hand, squeezed it tightly. Then the needle broke the skin, punched through. A dot of color, a bright iridescent green, lay side by side with a perfectly circular dot of blood that had been coaxed to the surface by the tattooist's instrument. Jessie's skin flinched, relaxed. The needle approached again, penetrated. With casual impatience, Mutt wiped a cloth across Jessie's quivering belly, brushed his long, braided, white boy Rastafarian hair out of his eyes and over his shoulders with a great clacking of wooden beads and a smell not too dissimilar from that of a wet dog. Mutt was just that, a shaggy, brooding dog of a man. He leaned over Jessie, shirtless, his skin a dirty, greasy olive in color, with numerous piercings and tattoos covering his well-muscled yet slight form. I didn't really find him repugnant, merely mildly disgusting. Yet I could see it was these very same qualities that had attracted Jessie to him originally. I could see, despite myself, how they had been together, how his careless hygiene and rumpled demeanor might have appealed to her. As I thought these things, Jessie was stretched out topless upon a battered barber's chair of dubious lineage, Mutt straddled over her. His hands moved on her, bracing himself, roving here and there over her, stretching her skin, wiping at it. It was impersonal enough, but she writhed under his touch, seemingly as excited by him and the constant pricking of his needle as pained by it. Her compact rose-colored nipples were stiff and achingly erect, her breasts a mass of goosebumps. Light shined from the single gold ring that looped through the areola of her left nipple. I began to feel distinctly uncomfortable, voyeuristic in a jealous, envious way that I had not experienced before with Jessie. This is what they had looked like together, I realized self-consciously, when they made love long ago. This touching, as professional as it appeared, grabbed that part of me that had shambled into the light earlier, when she had first mentioned the tattoo, and shook it fiercely, like a dog worrying an old shoe. And that part of me was becoming angry. A rapier-thin moan hissed from between her lips, drew me back. When I looked down again, a bright green line snaked from just above and to the right of her navel, all the way to the midpoint between her breasts. One of Mutt's hands, large and flat like the blade of a shovel, clenched Jessie's right breast, held it away from the area he was working on. A single, dirty nailed finger rested casually, familiarly, atop her nipple. "Hey," I muttered, "watch it." Mutt looked at me through the veil of his hair and smiled the smile of a cur, toothy and nervously courageous. He slowly, conspicuously removed his finger from Jessie's breast, moved his hand so only the heel of his palm held its weight aside. Jesse didn't notice, or chose to ignore, this exchange, and Mutt too quickly forgot it and me. It took nearly another 2 hours to complete this particular piece of body art, as Mutt called it. Jesse lay exhausted when he finished, but I still held her limp hand, patted it. Mutt told us in indifferent tones that the area around the tattoo would hurt a little for a while, maybe a couple of days. To shore up this statement, he shrugged, then helped me put Jessie's shirt back on. Her bra I wadded up and crammed into my pocket. I paid Mutt myself, with my own money. It was, I thought, as good a way to make my earlier disapproval up to Jessie as any I might be likely to come up with later. As I forked over a rather large amount of money to Mutt, I asked what it was he had permanently affixed to Jessie's chest. Mutt folded the cash into a thick, dirty bundle and pushed it into the front pocket of his long, baggy shorts. "It's a flower, man," he smiled again, this time disarming in its brutal, blunt dislike of me. "A fucking flower." He shook his head, laughed roughly, then disappeared into the recesses of the filthy little tattoo parlor. He took my question as an insult, but I truly couldn't tell what it was. We stumbled home after it was done, her and I. Jessie seemed overly tired and sluggish for so simple a procedure, but who was I to know? I had no tattoos. Certainly no other friends or lovers of mine sported them. Like so many things that Jessie dragged me into, I was not experienced in this. So I half-walked, half-carried her back to our apartment in some cheap industrial space on the north side of town. We talked a little on the way before she became so tired that I had to carry her. When you make a hole in something, anything, something else will want to get in through it. Or out, she laughed, describing her personal philosophy of tattoos. I laughed too. She could make you feel giddy even when you were mad at her. 2 buses, 7 blocks of walking, and countless wandering stares later, I got her home and closed the door behind us. My arm was numb from holding her up, but I gathered her to me nonetheless and carried her through our open, minimalist living space to bed. Jessie didn't stir much as I removed her Doc Martens, unsnapped, then slid her jeans down and off. She wore no panties, and her bra was still a ball in my pocket. I hesitated at removing her shirt when I saw that virulent green line oozing up her belly in the darkness underneath. I thought of her rolling over in the night, pressing her naked body to mine, pressing that thing to me, and I shivered. I left her shirt on, stripped myself, and crawled into bed with her. She smelled like the tattoo shop, like mutt, like blood. I fell asleep facing away from her. Late that night, I awoke. The wind stirred the sheer curtains covering the huge open windows that were one entire side of our apartment. I heard the ghostly huff and rumble of a train in the distance, near the river. Industrial dusk to dawn spilled pools of orange sherbet-colored light onto the floor. Something moved next to me, rubbed against me with urgency. "Mikey?" I heard her breathe into my ear. "Are you awake?" Suddenly, I was. Very. She purred delightedly, her hand reaching around me, grasping me. "You are." I turned over and found her face, kissed it. Her lips were as cool as the night air, moist. Her skin, though, was hot and sticky. For a moment I thought she might be delirious, feverish from an infection due to her damned tattoo. But her hands and lips left me little time to think, so I didn't. As we embraced, I noticed that at some time during the night she had removed her shirt. Jessie seemed frantic in her lovemaking, nipping and rubbing and pulling me to her until the sheets and pillows were kicked away, leaving just us, tangled, sweating, and breathing heavily. She lay back, relatively docile, as I trailed kisses across her breasts, down her belly. As my head pushed lower, my hand reached up for purchase in the darkness, slid across flesh. Something wet and accommodating engulfed my index finger, drew it in, sucked it. My excitement neared crescendo. I became more frantic, my kisses more fervent, lingering as I descended. Her mouth scoured my finger, released it, drew in the next. I can't begin to describe how intense this experience was, how it overwhelmed my senses, until she spoke. "Come up here." Aside from panting, her voice was certainly ungarbled by any of my fingers. I instantly broke the surface of my drowning desire and with chilling clarity moved the hand that was being sucked upon. It swept up the curve of a breast. In one motion, I uncorked my finger from whatever held it and lifted myself to see what it was. My finger came free with a sound not unlike that of pulling a wet sneaker from a puddle of thick mud. "Here," Jessie pleaded, still writhing beneath me as I hovered over her on unsteady arms. I looked down, and those arms nearly gave out. The ridiculous orange light oozed across Jessie's body, falling full on the tattoo that lay between her breasts. Where the bud of the supposed rose should have been, though, there was a dark hole in her flesh. It gaped like a glistening wound, and its edges opened and closed wetly, making little slurping, kissing sounds. I closed my eyes, opened them. My fingers had been there, in there. With force that was more spasm than coherent movement, I pushed myself away from her, tumbled over the edge of the bed, and thwacked my head on the cold concrete floor. Not too hard, but it stunned me for a moment. It took some time for Jessie to realize I was not there anymore. "Mikey?" I heard her voice above me. It sounded normal now. "Here," I grunted, pulling myself up and rubbing the back of my head. "Where did you go?" she asked, moving across the bed toward me. I saw a slim white hand, hesitated, took it. "What happened?" she asked again, helping me to a sitting position next to her on the bed. "I don't know," I hesitated, hoping she would think it was the blow to my head and not the terrified beating of my heart that had me rattled. "My arms just gave out, I guess." From within the orange-tinted darkness, I saw the gleam of her smile. "Dopey, you're probably still exhausted from carrying me home. Just lie here with me." Even that, frankly, was more than I was capable of at that point. She drew me near, and I stiffened, resisted a bit, put my hand out. To ward her off, to see if it was still there? It wasn't. My hand encountered smooth, unbroken flesh that arced gently upward in either direction. No ragged, slurping hole. "Hey," she giggled, pulling my groping hands away. "Don't start something you can't finish. Just lie back and relax now. Fall asleep." Jessie pulled me to her again, and my head fell toward her breast. But I couldn't relax, couldn't nuzzle my head to her. Not there, anyway. "I need a drink," I said, pulling away perhaps a bit too brusquely. "Sure, okay, whatever. I'm gonna get a glass of juice. Want some?" "Nope. I'm going back to sleep. Hurry back." She yawned, gathering the sheets and pillows and nesting them around her. I padded across the floor to the kitchen area, drew open the refrigerator door. Light exploded from it, and I reached in, dazzled, and grabbed for the juice container. The acidic orange juice drunk straight from the container cut through the dust and mucus that filled my mouth, cleared my aching, swirling head. I didn't hurry back to bed. Don't know how long I stood there watching her as she fell quickly back into sleep, as if the past 15 minutes had been no more than a dream. Must have been a while. The orange juice container slipping from my grasp roused me. Rather than open the fridge again and let the light out, I drained the rest of the juice, left the empty container on the counter. I fell asleep on the couch near the windows, feeling the breeze and the edges of the curtains tickle my skin, and watched the pale crescent of Jessie's body wax under the approaching light of dawn. When I arose late in the morning, she was gone. It was already becoming hot as the sun climbed the blue hill of the sky. A thin, lazy wind curled into the apartment without so much as disturbing the curtains at all. The heat also brought with it more of the industrial smells of our neighborhood, tar and asphalt, unknown, probably caustic, and most certainly carcinogenic chemicals, burning diesel and oil from the hundreds of tractor trailers that swarmed around the area, all topped by the rich, rotten miasma of the nearby river. As my head cleared, I remembered the day, the night before, the tattoo, and Jessie was gone. For some unfathomable reason, this alarmed me, angered me. Understand, if you don't already, that Jessie and I were what are charitably called free spirits, or as my father called us, deadbeats. We had no schedules, no constant source of employment, nowhere we had to be at any given time. and it certainly was in keeping for Jessie to leave without telling me where she'd be. I never worried about this because she always turned up none the worse for wear. I told myself this as I scrambled into my clothes, laced my boots. I told myself she was okay. I told myself she wasn't with Mutt, that she wasn't at the tattoo parlor. She was, of course. I knew it immediately. But why? Was she getting another tattoo? Was Mutt finishing the flower he had begun yesterday? Or was it something else? The word affair went through my mind then, derailing my thoughts. What a dumb, antiquated word it was. Not a word for the Pepsi MTV generation, a word suited more for the 9-to-5 middle manager screwing his secretary or the bored suburban housewife seducing the paperboy. Not for me. Not for Jessie. I mean, Christ, we were living together. We weren't married. As I considered all this, the dark, hulking thing within me that had flexed its muscles while Mutt shimmied atop Jessie the day before was growing stronger. It had quietly fought my conscience. It had won my heart. And had I been listening, I could have heard the sound of it coming now from my brain, screaming like an enraged juggernaut. Maybe I could have gotten out of its way. Maybe I would have wanted to. By the time I reached the tattoo parlor, it was late afternoon. The waning sun already threw down shadows into the canyons between the buildings, and everything looked uniformly gray. Of course, there was a closed sign in the yellowed, barred window of the shop, but the lights were on, and I could hear music from within, vibrating the glass. Tool or something. Of course, the door was locked. I was prepared for these eventualities. Slipping around the corner, I made my way down a narrow, littered alley to the back of the building. A battered metal door was embedded in the building here, rusting like a raw sore. Blocking it was a municipal trash dumpster filled with garbage. It was on wheels, and a few hard pushes got it moving easily. Mutt must have been depending on the dumpster to block access to the door, because it was unlocked. The knob turned easily, quietly, and I found myself in a storeroom filled with darkness, stacks of boxes, and garbage from lunches past, but mostly darkness. Another door, half open, led into the back room where yesterday Mutt had made holes in Jessie's skin. Something will want to get in. I closed the back door behind me. It creaked loudly on its ancient hinges, but the music was so loud in there I didn't worry. I stepped cautiously into the wedge of light that pushed through the open door. Even as I peered around the door jamb, some part of me, some part that had not been thoroughly cowed by my anger, did not expect to see Jessie there. That part of me understood that I was about to make a fool of myself. It was pretty damned surprise then, when I saw Mutt and Jessie locked naked together on the battered and spotted reclining chair. His mouth and hands were all over her body, and her response was much the same as it had been with me the night before, feral and unthinking. Her hips pumped, ground into his lean body as he worked her into a frenzy. One of his spatulate hands stroked the area between her breasts. The tattoo. As I watched in anger and anticipatory horror, the tattoo rippled as if his hand had passed across the surface of a pool of water. Suddenly, it took on depth, became three-dimensional. It was a hole again, the hole that had sucked at my fingers last night. It was oozy, shiny, raw and wet, coral pink at the edges. As Mutt's fingers toyed with this orifice, he pushed himself up along Jessie's body, positioned himself above her. I saw his erection bob into view, and I was horribly sure where he meant to put it. Something will want to get in. With a flash of insight Jessie would have been proud of, I realized what he was doing. He loved her, that much was evident. He had not broken up with her a year ago. She had broken up with him. Or, as was more likely, she simply drifted away from him, like an errant moon breaking orbit. Sometime after that, Mutt must have come to realize why he had lost her. It was for the same reason that I knew, standing there watching this, that I, too, would eventually lose her. I will put it to you bluntly. You could fuck Jessie, but you could never touch her heart. Mutt had tried, and she had ended up stealing away from him as a prisoner escapes from jail. She had stayed with me for so long because I had never tried, never cared enough to bother. Mutt, though, had waited, waited until he had finally seen his chance. He had tattooed a hole, an entrance over Jesse's heart, not a flower. Something will want to get in. Now he was going to touch her heart in the only way he knew how, in the only way she knew how to let him. His back arched, his buttocks tensed. The curve of his back, so pronounced now that his knobby spine threatened to pop through the taut, shiny skin, flattened, drove down. The tattoo above Jesse's heart accepted him. He pressed down to her chest, shuddered deeply, like a dog shaking off water. I could not watch any longer. Nearly falling into the room, I caught myself, stopped at the side of the chair as the two heaved and groaned near me. When I looked down, tears squeezed from Jesse's closed eyes. Mutt turned his head sideways, grinned ravenously at me through his lank braids, grunted. In anger, I reached out, closed my hand around the first thing it touched. It glistened in the light, cold in my hand. With another move from me, it began vibrating in my hand, oddly comforting. Arcing it over my head, I brought it down hard onto that straining, undulating wall of muscle. Mutt screamed. It skipped over his skin like the needle of a kid's cheap phonograph, leaving a meandering trail of red that looked like I had drawn a ragged cut, a wound onto the unbroken flesh of his back, and it became one. Mutt wailed, his arms flailing out behind him in an attempt to grasp the needle from my hand. But it was too late. Blood, or was it red dye, gargled from the wound, pooled across the ridges and scarps of his back, ran down Jesse's sides and the cracked autumn gold vinyl of the reclining chair. Jesse screamed then, I think. At least I hear her scream when I have my nightmare. I remember bringing the needle up again. The music was very loud. Mutt's body flopped to the ground, didn't move. Red dye, red tattoo dye was everywhere. I brought the needle down to Jesse. I love you. I said it, or she said it. It doesn't matter now. I remember her eyes then, wide and vacant, trying to stare up at the red blotch I had made on her forehead. Now. That was a year and many states ago. I don't even know the name of the city I'm staying in. One of those California names. San something. I'm in a one-room apartment in a part of the city that's so seedy it's nearly fashionable. Jesse would have liked it. I often stand naked here at night, as I'm doing right now, with the lights of the bars and tattoo parlors winking at me, reflecting off my body. I look in the mirror that hangs on the door in my room, and I remember what Jesse told me. When you make a hole in something, anything, something else will want to get in through it, or out. I have tried, you see, to let it out, but so far nothing. I'm afraid that I am empty, devoid of love. Every square inch of my body is tattooed. I have shaved off all of my hair, replaced it with tattoos. I have forgotten what color I was. Black, white, yellow. It doesn't matter. I have pierced every limb or appendage my body has to offer. My ears and nipples first, but then my eyebrows, nose, cheeks, navel, penis, scrotum, the webbing between my fingers. Last week I had my tongue pierced and could not talk for 3 days. They did it by hammering a nail through it. And then I realized. It was so simple, really, when it came to me. Jesse would be proud. The holes were too small for my love to get out. It took me a little while to save up the money to buy it. The tired, disinterested clerk at the gun and liquor store told me that bullets, dum-dums he called them, I think, made the biggest holes. That, I smiled, is what I need then. When I saw myself smiling in the two-way mirror behind the man, I saw Mutt. I think this will work. I'm ready. I just hope that I will see Jesse when my love finally gets out, because I will tell her that I love her.
It sometimes strikes me that this is quite an odd job for me. I love horror, but at heart, I'm a science fiction boy. At least I always thought so. My favourite movies, The Abyss, always. Okay, it's fantasy. Also, Shut Up, it's great. Biggles, Ocean's 11, Kiss Kiss, Bang Bang, the Terminator series, the Alien movies, apart from the last one, the Star Trek films, and so on down the list. There's not a lot of horror on the DVD shelves which I write this in front of. But when I look closer, it becomes much clearer. The Alien films are out-and-out horror. The Others is one of the best pieces of horror fiction of the last 20 years. Jekyll is a cheerful, blood-soaked clown of a series with a big smile and meat in its teeth. And Dexter and Supernatural, fundamentally, shows about a sociopath with a curious set of morals and a pair of hobos who will live and die defending people from creatures they never see and may never know about. That's when it hits me. Horror isn't just about the addition of a terrible element to a mundane situation, like The Others or Richard Matheson's superb Hell House, or the subtraction of freedom and knowledge and hope, as is presented by Cube. No, horror isn't just about seeing something approach, despite what William Friedkin says, or about what you can chop off in what entertaining manner, whilst Tobin Bell intones grimly in your general direction in yet another Bloody Saw sequel. No, horror is right here. It's in front of you. Unfettered and unchained and staring at you with eyes that are black if you're lucky, or very different colours if you're not. Horror lacks the distance of science fiction and fantasy, and whilst it sacrifices a little individuality for that distance, it more than makes up for it in variety. Horror is elder gods and deformed maniacs at the end of the street. Horror is calling an ambulance and finding out the crew are both serial killers. Horror is finding everything you ever wanted, having no idea what to do with it. Horror is having to do something terrible for a good reason, or a bad reason, or because if you don't, something even worse will happen. Horror is staring at the damp, wet walls of the world and seeing the claws begin to tear through. Horror is being alone and being in a crowd and being dead and being alive and everything that falls between. Horror is everything and nothing. It's in where you find it and how you look for it. Horror is the grifter brother of the other genres, wanting to show you a card trick even as it signals its friends to take you outside. Horror is unique and personal and universal. Horror is why I really, really, really love my job, because I never know what's coming next. So thank you to the authors and you, the listeners, for keeping this interesting. Pseudopod relies on you to feed. Did I say feed? Never mind, I meant pay its authors, so if you like this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Promise you won't regret it. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. And Pseudopod wants to know, how much do you weigh now, Caroline?